Hey everyone, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Andrea, or as most people call me, Anj.
And this is Trendish.
We'll be covering relationships, faith, leadership, health, and everything in between. I'll definitely troll.
And I'll probably cry.
And we're so glad you're here to witness the whole thing.
Thanks for joining us. Let's dive in.
Well, thanks for joining us today. This is kind of the round out of the Church Hurt series where we've been in. And we're ending with someone Anj and I know very well and look up to in a lot of ways. Anj, you want to intro our guest today?
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly thought you were going to, so this is going to be off the cuff, but I've done it a couple times, so I'll just pull from my past knowledge.
You know how it goes.
We have the legend, did you already say who it was? The legend, Bobby Parks, with us here today. Bobby, there's a lot of ways I could introduce him, but one of my favorites is to tell the whole world that he actually married John and I. So a lot of different roles he's played in our life, but he specifically married my husband and I. So we have much, much love and respect for he and Brooke. Jamie and I specifically also worked under him in the missions department at ORU, which was a huge, huge honor. And since then, he still is doing missions. He still loves missions, even for you specifically. He's coming back all the time and helping in those ways. But I want him actually to tell a little bit about what he's doing now, so we won't really cover that. But personally, he is a father of two beautiful children, a husband to an incredibly beautiful and insanely powerhouse wife, Brooke. Brooke Parks, shout out to you.
That's right.
Bobby is someone who we really do value in a lot of things, but specifically regarding honor, leadership, the way that you honor, in and out of leadership, in and out of ministry, in and out of the church. We've physically seen him live out what he says and live out what he preaches and really make sure that he has accountability to ensure he's doing both of those things. And so we would not be where we are today if Bobby Parks didn't see what could be in our hearts and our souls and in our daughtership, because we're not technically sons. So yeah, the daughtership that we hold there. So we appreciate Bobby for all those things. Do you want to open us up here and share a little bit about who you are, what you're doing now, life outside of ORU and ORU missions, kind of the way that we met you?
Sure. Hey, thanks for that amazing introduction, Andrea and Jamie. Thanks for having me. I told you girls when you invited me, I didn't know if I was trendish enough to be on the Trendish podcast, but glad I barely made the cut, as you said.
No, you got your Nikes. And those jacket, the bomber jackets. I mean, you're trendy.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, I still don't have a leather jacket like girls, but I'll one day, maybe. But no, thank you. Thanks for the honor of inviting me. And what a joy it was when we all got to work together, serve together. And I learned a lot from you girls, not just what was trendish. Jamie was always feeding me cool music, which I loved.
My favorite thing to do.
Sounds spot on.
Yeah, no, I definitely learned a lot from watching the way that Anj led her peers as well, too. And so, yeah, it's a joy now, a few years later, and getting to be on here with you guys. And so the last 5 years after I left ORU, my wife and I moved down to DFW. We live in Grand Prairie, Texas right now. And we were serving in missions mobilization at ORU. Brooke was serving at Voice of the Martyrs. You know, both of us were traveling, even serving the persecuted church in the Middle East at that time. We were thinking maybe we'd move that way. And we were praying, new transition was coming. We loved ORU, but it was just our time and our season. And a mentor of mine, Rob Hoskins, challenged me to meet with a family down in DFW that owned several different businesses, but they had a big heart for ministry. They were looking for someone to kind of help them with their mission strategy, ministry strategy within their company, community, and around the world. And, at first we were just like, no, I think we're going to, go serve these other harvest fields that we felt like God was leading us to. Then after we met with this family, a few times, we knew it was the Lord asking us to join them and this vision to help serve it. And, for us, it was, we don't care whose ministry it is, whose name's on it, if it's kingdom, were about it. So instead of, you know, moving to a different nation, we moved to the nation of Texas, the Republic of Texas.
Sorry, I hurted you.
I know. It's scary though, how that pride, it just slips in there on you. At first you're like, I detest this Texan pride. And then before late, you know, too long, you're talking about how everything really is bigger and better, you know, from the barbecue and Tex-Mex and trucks and everything else, you know, down here. I know it's scary.
Can't believe I'm hearing you. Are you a Cowboys fan?
No.
Okay.
No,
as long as you don't convert that route, honestly, that's great. I'll receive it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We're still safe there. So, but yeah, you know, so I serve as a chief ministry officer for a family of companies. So we have seven different companies. I work in the family office that helps oversee all those companies. But they're not hiring me for my business acumen. I'm not making big decisions on our financial spreadsheets, but I'm, you know, we have a CFO, CEO, CIO, COO, and then here I am the CMO, but chief ministry officer. But I get a fun job of, yeah, what does it look like for us to make disciples in the workplace? It's easy to preach about and teach others. And then when you're actually in there, okay, what does this actually look like? What are the practical things we do? How do we show generous love in a work environment? How do we help create a culture of people that want to live on mission in the workplace, even some that don't share the same faith background as many of us, or may not, just might be in a different part of their journey. So it's fun, it's challenging. And then we get to work with, you know, some incredible leaders outside of our organization as well in our community. We do a lot of trying to bridge, you know, marketplace and faith-based communities, government, education. What does it look like for us to work together, collaborate, see a community transform? And then we still get to work with a lot of our friends around the world, some of which you guys, you know and you help to serve. And so, yeah, it's fun. You know, Brooke and I now have two kids, and obviously that's our first ministry is our family. We're still giving ourselves to a lot of other ministries, not just the one that is our full-time job. You know, we still work with the Burmese refugees in Tulsa. We're get to build what we call Hope Fields, synthetic turf, outreach fields. We've got one in Fort Worth that we built for some refugees here, and still get to partner, link up some great people like you guys. So excited to talk about honor, talk about leadership, talk about accountability with you ladies.
Love it.
Like, it's a good intro.
I think he would do better than for himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody knows him better, but I think I just need to add, you know, we've seen you in so many different settings. And so if people don't know you, I just feel like I have to share like some of my favorite moments of us like all working together were these like late nights where we're just like doing stuff until, you know, 1-2 in the morning and just. I think you always knew when a leader like had hit their point when they like the hat went backwards or like the head is on the table.
The candid Bobby.
We had so many. Yes. I have my own moments like that now. Like I've got this sweatband in my office and when I put it on, you just know it's like we're past the point of no return.
Sweatband so. Jamie. Yeah. That's got to be a fun time right there.
Yeah,
when the sweatband
is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Thanks for also making me look like a boss that was, you know, keeping his employees working till 1 or 2.
Yeah, we were there all night.
Let's talk about honor.
He also, yeah. I mean, the same boss. I should have opened with this, but we traveled to Israel together. Yeah. All of us. I mean, what
ate
a time.
Ate a lot of shawarma together.
Ate a lot of shawarma. Yep. I mean, yeah, what better intro?
Corralled the 144 together.
The 144, so, yeah. The tribe. You guys left me with 144. For a day. I'll never forget.
When we went to Haifa. Yeah. That was when I had a talk with your now husband.
Yes, right. Yep. That was the time.
About honor. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe we can cover that.
Speaking of honor, we, Anja and I really felt like this is somewhere we've kind of wanted to go for a while. And I feel like, you know, both of us have seen you in settings where we've seen you honor really well. I think if you've been around the ORU missions culture at all, it's something that's ingrained deeply in the past and present, and it looks different than other places I've worked. And, you know, I know there are settings where it's not always necessarily easy to honor. Maybe you've been in a situation where, you know, you don't agree with what the leadership above you has, you know, done or said, or, you know, the vision that they're moving toward. So I guess I would love for you to just talk about honor. Where does that come from for you? And I guess, what does that look like in today's society where there is so much division? Like, how can we really honor, even if we don't necessarily agree or feel like we want to?
Yeah, those are great questions. Yeah, a lot there to unpack, especially in the day and age that we're living in, you know, cancel culture and wokeness. You know, we're all trying to, you know, prove how righteous we are and how right we are, and, you know, prove that we're on the right side of history, and yeah, that we care about justice. And so, yeah, we're all trying to vie for, proving something. But, you know, I think to your question about what does it look like to honor when you don't agree with someone, and I would say that, yeah, the older you get, you just realize, like, much of life is like agreeing to disagree. Mm-hmm. You know, you just start realizing, like, actually, I don't agree with the way my parents raised me. I don't agree with my siblings anymore. You know, even when we were younger, we had friend groups that, you know, we listened to the same songs, we shared similar passions. And then as you grow older, you realize, like, yeah, I mean, I've got some of my best friends in the world, and I'm like, I don't agree with the way they parent their kids. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, so we all have to wrestle and reconcile with this. Like, we all have different personalities. We all have different perspectives.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think so much of leadership, so much of relationship, is when you learn how to realize, I'm not going to agree with every way that someone does things. I might not even think it's the right way. And of course, I think my way is the right way. Otherwise, I'd be doing it differently, right? So when you get to that realization of, like, man, much of life, I just see things different than others. Others see it different than me. But how do I still walk in the way of love? How do I still use my words to honor, to celebrate others, even that I don't agree with all the time? And I think honor reveals a whole lot of what's in our heart. You know, when we learn to honor, I think honor unlocks something, not just in us, but in others. I think when, you know, we choose to use our words and celebrate others, when we choose to let people know that we see them, we see the gifts, the wisdom, the talents, the strengths that they have, and we vocalize that, I have a biblical worldview. I believe that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So what's in our heart comes out. And so, yeah, our mouth is a litmus test, but it's really a litmus test of the posture of our heart towards others. And so, of course, young leaders, you're going to, you know, be working for people that you don't agree with. You don't agree with, decisions they make, how they lead, or how they're leading the company or your department. That's always going to happen. I'm in meetings. I was in 8 meetings today, and I don't know that I agree with any of the leaders, decisions they're making, but the posture of my heart in that meeting, if I didn't choose to use my words to honor, to see people, people wouldn't have also listened to me. I would have lost trust and my relational equity with those people. It's easy to dishonor others. It's easy to point out others' mistakes. We see everyone's flaws. There's things that we always disagree with all the time. That's the easy road. Honor is the harder road, but I believe it's worth it. It's the worthwhile road. And so much of honor has to do with perspective. You know, Jamie, Andrea, you guys have traveled with me to different countries. And it's just when your eyes are opened and you see another culture and you see the beauty, but you also see some things, you're like, wow, that's kind of interesting they do it that way over there. You know, it's not the way we do it back home in America, right? But we come back though, and many times we have this, like, oh, our eyes were open. We have this perspective that shifted and change. And many times it changed us for the better, what we were able to see. We have a unique perspective. And then we come back home to friends or parents or leaders in our life that they didn't have the privilege of having the same perspective. And we expect them to see what we saw. We expect them to see the world in the same way that we did, but yet they didn't have the privilege to see what we saw. And I think honor so much has to do with that. It has to do with our perspective. So we see things a certain way. I think this is the right way. But someone else sees things a whole different way. And a lot of that has to do with our privilege.
Yeah.
You know, I've been privileged to see things the way I have. I can't judge someone that hasn't seen what I've seen. And part of when I honor them, when I choose to show grace to them, when I choose to walk in the way of love, then I'm hoping to help them to see what I see. But how I interact with them, if I choose to honor and not dishonor, might help them to see from my perspective. But there's also something I think we need to realize is that I don't know what that other person sees. And especially someone in leadership above me, I don't have the vantage point or the perspective to see the 360 view of everything they see. Sometimes I just see what I see. Well, man, this decision affected me in my department, or yeah, it's making it harder for me and my team now, but I have no idea the scope of what they're having to see and handle. And I think that's a mistake that sometimes us young leaders make a lot. From our perspective, what we have privy to see, we think that everyone else sees the same thing we see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes leaders might see that, but they also see things that maybe we didn't see, or they didn't have the privilege to be exposed to what we saw. And so part of what honor does, it helps unlock our perspective, but it helps unlock others' perspective as well too.
This wasn't on our list of questions for you, Bobby, so I'm going off script here a little bit, but I am kind of curious as you talk about all of that, which is awesome, incredible, and very in line with, again, what you practice. We didn't get into your story in the intro, but obviously knowing part of your story, do you always feel like you just were born with this ability to honor? Or is that something that I almost kind of see honor like a muscle, where I think you can actually build it up over time? I think it's like a practice that you can continue to do and honestly choose to do as well. I mean, get married and then you really find out how much you have to choose to do that. It really grows the muscle. But I am curious from like just your life, however much you want to share in this, do you feel like you've always had that perspective of honor? And if you haven't, what kinds of things grew that in you to where you can just so freely give, you know, an hour long keynote on honor and really live that out as well? Like, what got you to that point?
Yeah, I mean, great question. And the quick answer is no, of course not. I didn't always, I didn't come out of the womb honoring, you ladies know some of my story. My father committed suicide when I was younger. I was lost, broken, insecure, you know, drug addiction, alcohol, unhealthy relationships, arrested, you know, kicked out of my own house. I mean, I was on a road of destruction, death, bondage. And then, yeah, something changed. I met Jesus, new freedom, but something unlocked in my heart when I understood Heavenly Father's love, when I understood affirmation, when, you know, for the first time, it was like I felt secure in who I was. Now, my security wasn't based on what I did, because I was lost, broken. What I did was actually, it was just a life of sin. So when I had this revelation that was unlocked of like, man, I am loved not on what I did, not on my performance, because my performance, if you made a report card or a track record or had a performance evaluation, I would have failed. And, I knew that. But then yet when I experienced this freedom, when I experienced love, when I understood the way I believe that God sees us all, that receive his forgiveness and his grace, is that we can be confident in who we are. We can be confident in that love and secure in that identity. So, you know, we talked about sonship, daughterhood. You know, I think honor really comes down to, as I mentioned, it's a litmus test. I recognize in my life when I am walking in dishonor with others, when I'm constantly judging others, when, you know, I out of the overflow of my heart, the mouth speaks, and I'm constantly complaining about people. I can point out everyone's wrongs and, well, they said that, and I can't believe they did that. Honestly, I think it's just exposing a place of insecurity in me or a place of pride. And I think that's what dishonor does. I mean, a lot of us, you know, when I was a young leader, there was a lot of pride in me. I thought, you know, I thought I knew it all. I thought I knew how to lead well. And, you know, if I was in their shoes, I would do it this way. And then one day you get in that person's shoes and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how hard it was. I didn't realize how many decisions, you know, there's never just like, oh, this is the right decision. This is the wrong decision. This is the right way. You're like, man, there's 800 ways, you know, we could do this and everyone's going to criticize me.
Yep.
I'm not going to make everyone happy. People are going to think I'm doing it the wrong way. And then you get humbled. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that pride was in me. But that the whole time I was pointing my finger at that other leader going, I can't believe that they don't do it this way, you know? Yep. And so, yeah, you know, it was a journey for me of learning how to walk in honor. I think humility helped me in a lot of ways when, you know, you felt some of the way that pressure, but I think most importantly, it's coming back to that place of, am I finding my identity in what I do and what others think about me, or am I finding my identity in who I am and that I'm loved? And when I'm secure in that, then you know what? It's easier for me to give honor to others. I'm not trying to compete with others. And I think this is what happens a lot. People don't realize it, but out of their insecurity, they're trying to put others down to make themselves look better. And it might just be in their own eyes for their own self-worth, you know, to make themselves feel better. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, many times we see this happen, toxic teams, unhealthy cultures. People are, they're trying to jockey for position because the posture of their heart isn't settled and secure. I'm like, I know who I am. I know I'm loved. And hey, it's not going to hurt me if someone else is elevated. In fact, I want to honor people. I want to speak life to them. I want to let them know from my perspective, I see this good in you. Yeah, I can make a long laundry list of the bad I see in you. And there, and we can talk about, there's a time to use our words and honest communication to speak the truth in love, to help others. But there's got to be a healthy culture of trust in order for that to happen. And that doesn't happen in cultures of dishonor. When people aren't walking in honor, it's really difficult to help coach people and speak the truth in love that they would receive that feedback to want to grow, because they see you as someone that's competing with them, because you're constantly trying to compete to jockey for position rather than being secure in who you are and the love that you have, the love that you've received. And so, I think for me, I had to be intentional about, man, if my words, if I'm cutting down, if I'm judging, if I'm criticizing, rather than pointing the finger at others, I'd go, man, what is it in my heart that is feeling unsettled, that's feeling insecure? Why am I worrying so much about, you know, putting others down and, you know, judging that leader? Is there pride in my heart? Is there insecurity in my heart? Is there fear in my heart? And then, you know, getting to a place of being intentional, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look for ways to speak life. I'm going to look for the best in others. How do I empower those above me, beside me, below me? How do I use my words? I believe that there's power of life and death in our tongue. Our words can either build up or tear down. And so, you know, for me, I make a conscious effort. It's something small, but you ladies have been around me, even in our staff meetings. You know, we talked about shout out time, speak life. We intentionally do that. But for me as a leader, a young leader, you know, leading up, leading beside and leading down, one of the best ways that I know as a litmus test, again, for my heart, what's in my heart is going to come out of my mouth. And so sometimes I would intentionally say, Bobby, speak life. Find ways to see the good in others, see the gold, and use your words to encourage that, empower that. And then what happens is it unlocks a culture within your team where others are doing that as well. Now we're not trying to compete and just point out our flaws and I'm better than you because you messed up. Now it's like we elevate everyone. Like, you know, the tide rises and it raises all the boats. I think that's what happens when we honor, when we use our words. But yeah, definitely a journey. I've struggled with it at times, but usually I can get back to, if I'm dishonoring others, I'm having a tough time honor in my heart. It's usually a heart issue in me, a posture of my heart, insecurity, pride, fear.
Kind of in a little bit of a different vein, but similarly, like as a leader, how do you correct dishonor? And you know, this kind of ties into like talking about accountability and where you start with that, but I guess I'm just curious, like how would you address that?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, are you asking particularly if you're leading a team, maybe you're a department head, a manager, or you know, you're leading a team of your peers and man, it's a toxic culture, people yes. aren't honoring others with their yep. words, attitudes? Yeah, you know, I shared that just very practical thing, but, you know, I've tried instituting that even in my workplace when I first got there. It wasn't a culture of honor. It wasn't a culture of feedback. It was just all performance. It was just, you do, and you do good, great. If you do bad, someone will tell you if you do bad. But it's usually not like, hey, let me help walk you. It's like, you may not be around much longer, you know? So, you know, I think even whether you have a position and title of leadership, or you're just leading with your influence, simple things like helping people speak life. Again, coming back to perspective, I don't know what others see. I can only be responsible for what I see, but I want to use my perspective not to judge others or look down on them because they can't see what I see. I want to use that perspective to uplift others, to help them. And at times it might be like, hey, I see things this way. I don't, you know, man, I don't see it exactly that way, but I want to learn how you see. Here's what I see. But many times what it is I'm speaking life over them. Hey, man, I see the way that you go the second mile. I see the way that when you put on that sweatband, you know, Jamie, and you're working till 1 a.m., going the extra mile for others. Others may not see it publicly, but hey, just want to let you know, we see you and we honor the ways that you do things with excellence. So you lead the way with that. But then even sometimes, you know, if you have that influence to set the culture for a department, a team, I would institute some speak life, some shout outs, whether you have people write it on a card and they, you know, give it to someone, or you read out loud. Take 10 minutes in your staff meeting. Hey guys, I know we're stressed. I know that there's a lot going on. We all have a lot on our plates to get done. Man, life's been hard, work's hard. Hey, can we just take 10 minutes to celebrate those, some good that we've seen, not just in what we've accomplished, but some good that we've seen in each other. And sometimes, you know, that could be hard for some people that aren't used to using their words to do that. But I think it's those small things, and it help, again, you know, Ash, your example of muscle, it's helping people work that muscle, but you're helping people to see from a different perspective. Sometimes you're helping them to work the muscle of empathy. Mm-hmm. Man, I never knew what it was like to be in your shoes. But as I'm thinking about, man, yeah, I can't imagine all that you've had on your plate at home, what you've been going through, but yet at work, you're still showing grace to others. You're still handling so much. And it's, you know, so I think, yeah, heart issue, posture issue, it's your words, but then it's also going to help people in their perspective, and perspective definitely is going to help build some empathy in others as well.
I think there's a level too where like honor almost disarms the dishonor. Like there's been so many people, again, just using you as an example because we're interviewing you, but that I've had interactions with and I'm like, that person is the biggest jerk of all time, right? They interact with like Bobby and I'm like, why are they literally why are they so nice now? Like, what in the world? And it's like, no, he literally went into that conversation with a hi, everything he sees in them, love you, proud of you, doing good. How are you going to be a jerk at that point? Like, he might be working on honor in other areas of his life still, this person, but like, to be able to see that, it's, you're automatically, I guess, leading. Now, if he's leading that team or that person, there's only so much you can really come back with, or so many ways you can intentionally continue to dishonor when you see it being done above you and around you so much. I think it just, I don't know, there's some kind of disarming presence I think that brings as well. So I feel like what I hear you saying, and that I think I've seen lived out too, which I think is also really helpful.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a great point, Ansh. And I think though, what happens is when you honor others, again, it unlocks something in them, but it's unlocking trust. And then you earn the right in their life if they are willing to receive that feedback. And you do have something to say, hey, because I love you, because I see this in you, hey, I want to see you grow in this area. Mm-hmm. This is from my perspective. You might have a blind spot. Here's what I've been able to see. But that I can't just go at people, judging them, criticizing them, seeing their flaws. We all have flaws. We all have blind spots. We all, again, do things different. We're not going to agree with everyone. But when you honor, you earn trust of that person. It can unlock stuff, but it unlocks the right to be able to love that person, to speak the truth in love when they need to hear it and at the right time.
Oh, I don't know if you would say the word coaching. It sounds like that. Like you have these moments where you get to like be someone that is coaching somebody into kind of, you know, growth, if you will. I guess I'm curious, like, where is the line? I know we're switching gears a little bit to more of a leadership side now, but in terms of that, like, where is the line between, okay, this person just needs grace right now, and okay, this person like needs like a healthy challenge. Like, if I've seen you do anything in, I don't know, the 7 or 8 years I've known you, like, it's like, I just think about the amount of people that were like not going to do missions leadership, and like they got, you know, a healthy challenge from Bobby, and you know, they just it unlocked something for them where they were then like, yes, actually that is something I was afraid. I, you know, was worried about my workload, et cetera, et cetera. But like, how do you know where the balance is there?
That's a good question. You know, and you're talking about between grace and challenge. You know, I think if we don't lead with grace, it's just going to come across as like, hard work all the time. You know, that like you're a leader that's just, I'm just demanding, you know, I demand the best. I demand your best performance. I'm going to squeeze every ounce of you. And then people, they feel like an asset that you're just trying to squeeze to perform something. But when you lead with grace, and I lead with grace because I need grace. Like I'm not a perfect leader. I hope people show me grace because I don't have it all together. I'm not perfect. I haven't, you know, there's tough days and I make mistakes. Again, a lot of my leadership decisions, I know that people are judging me, wanting to cancel me and don't agree with everything. So, I hope that they would show me grace. I know that that's not always the case, but I'm going to choose to lead with grace despite that. I'm a man that's been given a lot of grace. You know, I love, you know, again, from a biblical worldview, those who have been forgiven much, love much. I've been forgiven a lot. How could I not show forgiveness to others? So, you know, my wife says a lot. I know you girls have both even said it, you know, in my leadership, maybe I show too much grace at times. You know, my wife has been like, you should have let the person go a long time ago. and there's times, yeah, maybe, but you know, for me, I'm like, man, if there's not going to be a leader in their life that does believe in them, that isn't willing to show them grace, isn't willing to be patient with them and help them, who will? And so for me, I value leading with grace in my leadership, not just browbeating and performance and you're not living up to expectations. If that's what they hear in me as a leader all the time, they're not going to be, they might, their motivation might be fear, or it might just be just get it done so I can move on past, check this off my list and learn what I need to do and then get on. I'm not inspiring them. I'm not encouraging them. I'm not empowering them to be who they are called to be. And that's what I want. Like I'm not just trying to squeeze them so I can get more out of them to get the work done. I'm really looking at it through the eyes of grace of like, man, I've received grace. And then look at where it's got me. Like people believed in me when they shouldn't have. People forgave me. They gave me opportunity. They gave me grace when I, you know, I didn't do anything to earn it. I wasn't, you know, I was a heathen boy. You know, I shouldn't have been a spiritual leader in other people's life, but yet grace, like yet this gospel, like yet this good news, yet forgiveness. It's like the things that make Jesus beautiful. Those of us that have fallen in love with him and want to follow him. It's like, it's not these rules and like, oh, you know, like, yeah, we follow Jesus so we can be better and be more. It's like, no, we've received something we didn't deserve. And so freely we've received, freely we must give. So I think in our leadership, we need to lead with that. And then again, that in turn gives us the right and the opportunity because we've earned trust in those that we're leading. They know we believe in them. We know that they know that we really want what's best for them, not just what's best for the organization. I'm not just trying to squeeze something out of you as an asset to perform. I'm doing this through the eyes of love, through the eyes of grace. And I want to help you to get better, not just for me, not just for the org, but for you, for your calling, for where you're at in your journey. But to get to that place, to be able to help coach people, help them grow, help challenge them to grow, to do something maybe they didn't always feel like doing, or that, man, I've got to grow in this area and it's not easy. It's not comfortable. Change never is comfortable. Transformation doesn't happen just by, you know, coasting through. Sometimes we need those leaders in our life that say, hey, you're here. I see you here. I see this in you. You're here. And I want to see you rise up, not to squeeze something out of you, but because I believe in you. But I've got to create a culture though, where people want that and that they are willing to receive that. I can't expect people to want me to challenge them unless I help create a culture. Here's why I'm going to ask you to do that sometimes. Here's the why. Here's where we're going. Here's my heart for you. Here's my heart, not just for our goals and our OGSMs and our KPIs and our outcomes of where we're trying to get to as a department, as an org. My bonus is tied to this. So let's, you know, if that's what we're leading, that's what, again, that's kind of a fear-based, performance-based. But man, when I'm leading through grace, when I'm leading through love, and really the people that I'm leading can sense that and feel that from me, I hope and pray that they're wise because they know I see that. I see you here. I see you growing. I see the best in you, and I want to see that come out of you. So yeah, I'm going to challenge you to get there. I'm going to speak the truth in love. I'm going to speak some life over you. But part of that means green light. Let's go. You got more inside of you. Don't give up. But I got to lead with grace to get there.
I've had many moments with you. I don't know if people have listened to previous episodes of the podcast, Anj probably knows what I'm going to say, but there was a moment where you really gave me grace when we were in Israel and you had told me to buy like 200 pairs of gloves. And I mean, like, I literally didn't do it.
Bobby, that it just stuck with her.
Completely forgot. And you just were like, it's fine. But I was like, what? Like, you asked me to get 200 pairs of gloves so people aren't picking up trash with their hands, and I didn't do it.
And it has literally stuck with
her. And you were like, you were unfazed.
Which is actually where I wanted this one little kind of segment I had to throw in, because it is from Bobby and one of the things I learned the most in working under you. But I feel like you know you're leading from grace when your lens in those coaching or corrective conversations or whatever it is looking at that person not for who they are right now, but who they'll be in 25 years. Like, that line is like ingrained into my head. I don't know if you said it to me, or I don't know if I heard you say it to someone else, but it is there. And when I learned that, even in my own heart as a leader, like, man, I think you find this grace, correct, challenge, paradigm, I don't know, the balance, the gray area of that, specifically through thinking like, what is actually going to be best for this person 25 years from now? And in that setting, we're working with college students, we're working with young adults. So it's really easy to picture them like, wow, 25 years from now. Okay. Like, we really have an opportunity here. But I think no matter where you are, whether you're working with 30 year olds, 40, 50, 60, still like 10 years from now, what is going to help this person then? And sometimes in that moment, it is like, what's going to be best for that person is a really hard conversation right now, or maybe like a discipline that I don't think is super, I don't want to give, but I really think that's going to be best for them 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, like, actually it would make sense for me to like let this person go, but what's going to be best for them 20 years from now is that they get that leader that you were just talking about, Bobby, that, you know, even if it's another 3 months, it might be 3 months that they needed in 20 years from now become better for it. And so I just think that's a really practical, I always ask myself, where am I gauging that in my lens? Cause I think it always tells me if I'm being too hard or a little too graceful. So I had to share with the class, cause I think you exemplify that really well.
Thanks. No, I still remember, Anj, you and Molly Chips, coming through the outreach and missions office. And, yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure that you ladies deserve to be in leadership.
No, I got a story like yours.
at that point, but it was grace though that, you know, yeah, seeing who you ladies could be and the leadership potential in you. And yeah, so I still remember those moments and you know, yeah, maybe another staff going, I don't know about them. But glad that you said yes to Jesus, said yes to those leadership growth moments, both of you. And look at you now, leading podcasts and doing big things.
it probably was specifically that conversation. Mm-hmm. That was a corrective one, though. You were like, so you done with that? Are we going to stop? I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Dang, I didn't even know.
Yeah, we can show grace, but that doesn't mean that we elevate people and give them leadership and responsibility that their character would not hold, or that would, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, for the sake of giving someone a leadership opportunity to grow them, but then I'm also going to hurt others in their influence leadership. I don't make those choices. Yep. I'm going to show grace, but yeah, but then here's that challenge point. You know, my, you know, talk vision cast delays was, I see you here. I see you using your influence to lead at this level, but to do that, yeah, you can't continue in some of these lifestyle choices. So yeah, I'm glad that you knew what was worth it. Yeah.
And I knew how to have the conversations later. So it served me well, experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Firsthand personally is right here.
Bobby, another question on leadership I want to ask you, and you can get as specific or general as you want to be with it. But I guess I'm just curious, like, when I think about the leaders in my life, like, you are up there in, I guess, examples of, you know, I've just seen you do all the things that you're saying, as Anja said. And I don't know that you get there without hard lessons. And I guess I'm just curious, like, what has been a really hard lesson you've learned firsthand in leadership that's helped propel you into a greater place of leadership?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I've had a lot of hard lessons in leadership. You know, I think one of the greatest ones, though, is the tension, the balance between humility and confidence in your leadership. And what I mean by that is you can be, and here's where I can fall sometimes. I could be so concerned about wanting to appear as humble that, and I'm not using my leadership in a positional place. I don't think I'm better than others. I'm not trying to, you know, just, yeah, lord over people or just have people serve me. So I want to humble myself. I want to be a servant leader. I want to get in the trenches. I want to show people that, you know, I'm not above you. I'm right here. But sometimes, one, people have mistaken my meekness for weakness. So that humility that I was trying to exemplify, that people saw, well, I'm a weak leader, and they could run over me. And then they would quickly learn that the New Yorker would come at me as well, that I would have to, lay down with the cross as well. Just, no, that's not what that was. And then that wasn't a great place either. So I had to learn that tension of, like, okay, how do I lead with confidence, but yet still carry humility? But I would also say the biggest lesson in leadership I've learned is I've lost my confidence as a leader. Not so much because I failed miserably in some horrible moral failure. It was because I thought I was a failure, because I thought I didn't have what it takes. I was my own worst critic. I was, man, I should have done that better. Or, gosh, you know, what's wrong with me? Why didn't I need to? And I was constantly my own worst critic, and I would lose confidence in my leadership at times. And that's this false sense of humility, though, as well, that it's not people. I had to learn that people wanted to be led, that leadership is a gift, and I needed to serve others with that gift of leadership. And I needed to walk in confidence in that, not in a place of pride, not in a place of arrogance. I knew that I didn't have it all together. I didn't have all the answers. I knew I wasn't a perfect leader. I knew that at times my performance, I was going to suck at times. You know, I wasn't always going to knock it out of the park. And I think as a leader, when you realize, man, actually there's no perfect leaders and I think coming back to honor, we're judging others, but there's no perfect leader. You're never going to serve underneath a perfect leader. There's never going to be a leader that just does it all the right way, that you agree with completely. But also you have to come to this realization, this place of humility, but a healthy sense of humility. You're never going to be a perfect leader either. Like, you are going to make mistakes. You're going to be criticized, but you have to caution yourself from being your own worst critic, from constantly. There's one thing about, hey, I want to get better. I want to improve. I want to learn. You know, I've asked mentors in my life and people beside me, even people below me. Hey, one of the things that I value a lot, I value feedback. It shows that you trust me enough. We have trust enough in our relationship that you can speak the truth in love. You can honor me by even helping me where I have blind spots. Maybe I missed it. But I have to be really careful, though, that self-critique, that criticism isn't crippling my leadership into the point where now I don't have confidence to lead and serve others in the position I'm in, to use my influence to help empower others, to lead with a clear vision and direction. So that tension of not being, appearing, trying to be so humble that then people don't even want to follow your leadership because you're not leading with confidence. You don't have a clear vision direction. You're so worried about others, you know, thinking that you're, you know, trying to jockey, use your position to lord it over them, that you're not actually leading and you're constantly deferring to everyone else. You know, it's great to get the feedback, wisdom, perspective of others, empower others, let them know they have a voice, let them know that you believe in them. But there's also a place of, like, you're the leader for a reason, and you need to use that gift to serve others with confidence. But I found one of the biggest things that inhibited me from walking confidence, it wasn't necessarily criticisms of others. It was my own criticism of myself. And so, you know, Hebrews 10 talks about don't throw away your confidence, for it will be richly rewarded. And for me as a leader, that tension of, again, not walking in pride or arrogance, but then not walking in this false sense of humility that isn't a leader worth following, isn't leading with confidence. So living in that tension, I'm going to be a leader that leads with humility, leads with grace, but I also need to lead with confidence, knowing who I am, knowing that I'm going to be an imperfect leader, knowing that there's no perfect leaders, but choosing to use the gift of leadership to serve others.
Yeah, you feel that on such a deep level. Mm-hmm. I think something, I feel like I've walked through that more recently, that self-criticism, and something that just, I don't know, helped in my journey has just been like, I really feel like God has been very clear about, like, I didn't ask you to carry that failure. I didn't ask you to carry that wrong decision you made or where you could have done it better. And that's just been so freeing for me. And I don't have to carry all of that stuff. He actually says, give it to me and I'll carry it. So
a lot easier to preach to others than to live out yourself, as always. Yeah. Your failure doesn't define you. Yeah. You know, your mistake doesn't make you a mistake. But then as a leader, when you make a mistake or you feel like you're failure, like, I suck. What am I even doing here? You know? Like,
yes.
But yeah. I'm never doing that again. Why, you know, and then we have to go, okay, I need to actually internalize these messages and pep talks I give others. And good talks.
Yep.
Yes. We're going to have to wrap it up here soon and give you our last challenging question, Bobby. But before we do, I do think one area that would be, I'm just even curious of your own insight on, whether that is any category of life, like leadership, husband, father, just, you know, son, but the idea of like accountability, I feel like that is, especially in ministry or just being an influential leader, I should say, whether it's ministry or not, but just influence as a leader. We are definitely like living, and there's definitely a generation coming up of people who really value authenticity. And of course, cancel culture almost comes with the authenticity, like one failure, you know, and you're canceled. But with that, on the other side of it, a lot of people are also talking about accountability to not even get to that place. What does that look like in your life? I mean, I'm sure it's looked different in different seasons, but what are some of the biggest takeaways or lessons you've learned in accountability, and how do you start? How did you even start in accountability for yourself as a leader?
Hmm. Yeah, so good. You know, I feel like I've got way too many principles here to share about accountability, because I think you ladies are on the point, though, even asking this. In lines with honor, in lines with cancel culture, because I think what we see, people have been hurt. They've been hurt by leaders that have failed. They've been hurt by leaders that had moral failures, that abused their position of influence and power. And we see that. We see the ramifications of that. Man, it's difficult to trust leaders. It's difficult to walk in honor. And I just want to say to everyone listening right now, if you've been underneath leadership and there was moral failure, there's a huge integrity issue, or there was abuse in any kind, verbal, physical, sexual, emotional, spiritual abuse, which grieves me that happens, but it does. I want to say that there is a right way, not just to honor them, but to walk in honor, to expose the darkness, to bring it to light. And so I just want to validate, if anyone's listening, like, okay, cool, you keep telling me to honor and speak life, but this person hurt me or abuse me. I just want to say to you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened. That should never happen. People should never use their influence or their leadership to abuse or hurt. They should use it to serve, to empower. If that is the case, that's not a case where you just need to walk in honor and, you know, speak life and, you know, just work on your heart issues. That is a case that, you might need to confront. Or you might need to bring someone else in to help you to do that. You might need to get out of a healthy situation. So I just want to hopefully no one misinterpret anything I was saying before. Moral issues, abuse issues, those things need to be exposed. I still think that there's a way to do that in honor. whether it's private or public. Some of those things should be handed privately. In fact, again, a biblical worldview, Matthew 18 tells us how to approach those things. When someone hurts you, sins against you, you go to that person directly if it's a safe environment. Now, if we're talking about there's abuse there, there's other ways. Bring some legal authorities there. But then if that doesn't work, then you bring a witness. And so we don't have time to talk in detail there. But I just want to say that I think that these issues that leaders haven't had the right accountability in their life have led to hurt, have led to abuse, have led to people. It's hard to honor there. And so I just want to say, I get it. I understand why it could be hard, but I think we could change things. The Bible says that God will turn the hearts of sons to fathers and the hearts of fathers to sons. I believe when we honor it, does that. But I also believe that we fathers, you can't be a good father or mother until you learn to be a good son or a daughter. And one of the ways that as a son and a daughter, let's just speak in your leadership right now. I'm not talking about if you're married and have kids or not. I'm talking about in your leadership. Maybe you're not in a position as a spiritual father and mother or a manager or a leader in your organization. You're more, hey, I'm under others. But I want to say right now, build accountability in your life right now to where you're heading, not just where you are right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people think, hey, when I get to be that leader, I'm going to have more freedom. I'm going to have more influence. And guess what? You're going to need more accountability. Mm-hmm. The more influence, the more leadership you have, the more accountability that you need. I've experienced that in my own life. I need accountability, not because I'm so scared that I'm going to mess everything up. I'm going to have a moral failure, but it just, the weight is bigger. The stress is bigger. Yeah. The challenges are greater. And so it doesn't mean you have less freedom or restrictions as far as now I've got more accountability. You know, I can't do as much. I'm more restricted. It means I value this weight that's been entrusted to me of influence so much. And I'm going to put some boundaries around myself and others, because boundaries protect what's valuable. And if we value our influence and we value the influence is a beautiful thing. It's a powerful thing. If we use it to serve and empower others, man, it could help elevate others to where they could be, who they could be. But we could also use our influence to hurt others. And so I want to create healthy boundaries, healthy accountability in my life to make sure that I'm stewarding that influence well. Maxwell says leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. I'm going to be a heretic for going against Maxwell right here, but I believe it's how we steward that influence. Mm-hmm. Everyone said, I mean, you know, Hitler had influence. Mm-hmm. It's not obviously okay, but how do you steward that influence? And to steward that influence, well, I believe we need accountability. So for me in my life, I've got relational accountability. Some of my best friends in my life, males in my life, I give them access, ask me the hard questions. I travel a lot for a living, ministry assignments, but yet sometimes, you know, I found after I've ministered, I'm the most tired. I could be the most vulnerable. So I want guys in my life that are like, hey, what are you watching at night? Ask me the hard questions. How am I doing with my wife? But it's not just that I'm going to fall into some weird sexual stuff. It's, hey, how's your heart doing, Bobby? Are you carrying too much weight right now? Man, I'm worried about you. You seem just tired, exhausted. Are you spending enough time with your family, your wife, your kids? You keep saying yes to all these ministry assignments, but can I ask you, are you living by your values, the things that you say, who you want to be? I've got people in my life that I've given access, and I've told them, not just ask me when you feel like it. I'm telling them, I need you to ask me that regularly because I need it. I need it in my life. Yeah. I need guys that love me, believe in me, but are not afraid to speak the truth, because I'm not superman. Man, I'm not superhuman. There's never a point in my life where I'm just arrived and I don't ever have to deal with it anymore. So I've got mentors in my life that I'm asking to speak into me. I've got accountability in my workplace and the position I'm in with bosses, boards in my life. So board governance, we can talk about another talk there. I think organizations need healthy board governance to guide them and lead them in healthy ways. Again, to protect boundaries, protect what's valuable, protect the value of the people that you're leading, the influence that you have. I've got accountability in my marriage, but I have accountability to those that I'm leading. And to me, it's a healthy fear, not an unhealthy one, but it puts the fear of God on me of, man, what if my influence hurt those that I was leading, that looked up to me? And I, Andrea and Jamie, here's where it got real to me. I used to live a life of sin and addiction and all that other stuff, you know, and met Jesus, got saved, no more drugs, no more unhealthy stuff. You know, it was like, okay, I was walking one way, walking a different way. And that was so true. And I was, man, I was a life transformed. And then I quickly got involved in ministry and leadership and influence and my testimony and missions trips and ORU leadership. And then I was out of that. And then I graduated college and no one knew me anymore as Bobby, who used to do all those things, but got saved and got free, or Bobby, who's a missions leader or ministry leader or head RA, or they just knew me as this young guy that was traveling, making good money, working for a business. And I was at the time in my heart judging other leaders that I saw falling. This pastor that was the head of this huge organization, huge church, and he's on the news. This person at our university, what in the world? How could they do that? They had this platform. In my heart, a lot of judgment for other leaders. And there need to be some things that were called to light, of course, but there was just a lot of unhealthy things coming in my heart. And then here I am, you know, a year plus into traveling on the road, 2-3 weeks out of the month, and coming home to my Christian friends and going back on the road. And guys, I'm telling people about Jesus on the road. I'm leading people to Jesus. It wasn't like I just started living this life of sin, but slowly what started happening was I started drifting. Things that I thought I would never have to deal with again, temptations. That was my old life. I'm new now, but I didn't have the right guardrails. I didn't have the right boundaries. I didn't have the right accountability. I didn't give people access when I was traveling, friends in my life, leaders in my life. Everyone just assumed I was doing great. And I was in many areas of my life, but then there's a few areas of my life I wasn't doing so well. And thank God, by his grace, I didn't go back down, you know, a horrible, horrible road, but I had to look myself in the mirror and admit that I could, admit that that was in me, admit that if I don't make some changes and give people access, that's going to be me. You know, mm-hmm. Maybe I wasn't big enough to be on TV one day. As, you know, this guy fell from leadership, but honestly, I didn't deserve to be in leadership. Yeah. You know, if I kept on some of the same paths I was on. And so I just want to say to any young leader listening right now, you need accountability, not because you're not awesome or God's not with you or that you don't have what it takes to lead, but because the more leadership, the more influence that you have and that you will have, the more accountability that you need. Because you're valuable enough. Mm-hmm. Your future family is valuable enough. Your marriage, your kids, who they're going to be, those under your influence. We're in the mess that we're in right now today as a society because leaders didn't steward their influence well. Mm-hmm. Made it difficult for people to honor. And I think one of the best ways we can honor others that we're leading, honor our future families and families that we have right now, honor our calling, who we are, and the leadership that we have, the influence that we have, to have great accountability in our life. Yeah. Don't be afraid to give people access. We need it. None of us are perfect. And I think when we get to that place of thinking that I'll never do that again, or that'll never happen to me, or those other leaders, it's a place of pride. And when that happens, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
When I think I don't need that, I've arrived, I'm better than that, man, that's there's something in my heart the posture of my heart that's not walking in a healthy place of honor. And I want to honor myself, my wife, my kids, those under my influence, my leadership, by having a lot of accountability in my life, because it's too valuable to me. My influence, my name, my family, where I know that God could use me, way too valuable to me to not have that accountability. So I want to say right now, if you don't have accountability in your life, man, grab some friends, get on the phone right now. I had to do that. I had to get on the phone. And guys that knew me, loved me, I just never gave them access. I just never told them I needed that. Got on the phone the next day when I looked myself in the mirror, when I was traveling on the road, and just said, guys, I need to tell you something. Here's what's been happening the last several months. I need you. I need you in my life. You know who I am. You know who I want to be. I'm telling you who I want to be. This is not who I want to be. Can you help me? So I gave them access. And I think we need more of us giving people access, helping to keep us accountable. Again, not just for the bad things that we might do, but that people that know who we are, know what we value, and holding us accountable to that.
I think, just in case people didn't hear it, you said it a lot of times, but you intentionally had to give people access. Like, I think there's just this underlying belief that we all have of like, oh, Jamie's going to see it in me. Like, she's going to know, she's going to see that I'm doing this. Like, I'm just waiting for her to call it out, you know, just, and if she's not, then it's obviously not bad. Like, I'm not bad enough because she's not calling. I literally think sometimes we just live with that. That's an easier thing to believe. But the reality is, like you just said, they didn't call you the next day and had, like, hey, I just had a revelation. There was a dream I had about you. I better call you. That happens sometimes, I guess, to people. But I mean, really practically, like, you had to seek people out and then not only seek them out, but say exactly what you're needing help in or accountability in or whatever it is. And so I really just want to point that out to people listening. If you didn't catch it, like, it takes an intentional call, ask, and a very clear one at that. When we talk about accountability, it's not just something that happens and that you get when you're a leader, but something that even in that story, you have to really intentionally go out and pursue, obviously with people who you trust and respect as well. But just because you trust them and respect them doesn't mean they can read your mind and read your lifestyle know what you're doing as well, even though the relationship's there. So just an extra challenge there for people if they didn't.
Catch it. I mean, you know, really practically how it plays out. So, you know, in the Bible, Paul, there's, you know, Timothy had Paul. Paul had Barnabas. Paul had Timothy to pour into. So a Paul in your life, some people over you that can speak into you, help challenge your blind spots and give them permission, not just to like speak life over you and help you to accomplish your goals. But I tell mentors in my life, I'm like, look, please, I've got enough people to pat me on the back, tell me good game. I don't have anyone telling me, Bobby, you missed those throws. You threw those interceptions. Yeah, I want someone to watch game film with me and help me with my blind spots. Again, that perspective that I don't have that they have, I want that in my life. And so I tell them, please, like, it's hard. It's hard sometimes people give feedback. But when we, again, when we're intentional with it, no, this is what I need in my life. I need someone that helps me see what I can't see, ask me the hard questions, challenge me here. I ask that my friends. And I'll tell them, guys, here's areas that I can struggle. I know myself. I know temptations. I know, man, when I'm tired. I know when I'm taking on too much. Hey, can you check in here? And some of that I have to be intentional. My best friend in the world, Mark Pepin, we've got a weekly prayer call. We pray every Friday morning, early in the morning, but it's also our time to check in, pulse. How are you doing in these areas of your life? We're both in ministry. It'd be easy for us to just be like, oh, they're doing great. But then, man, we know. It's like, oh, actually, it's hard. The world's hard. Family's hard. Life's hard. Ministry hard. Leadership's hard. And we're not perfect. So I've got him. I've got some other friends. And then I also invite feedback to those that I'm leading. And I tell them this. I say, hey, if you see something that's off in me, if things aren't coming across as healthy, if things seem a little sideways, will you let me know? Will you let me know? Hey, here's my heart for you. Here's our heart for where we're going. I want to make sure that I'm leading in that way. And if I'm ever not, maybe it's a misunderstanding. And maybe it might just be their perspective that, you know, they didn't see everything. But a lot of times it's probably those that I'm leading, if they can sense when things are unhealthy, when I'm off. And so I want that in my life. Those above me, those beside me, those below me, I'm going to invite feedback.
Yeah.
It helps me be accountable, but it helps me to grow, helps me be a better leader.
Well, we have one last question for you. I guess we'll judge how cool or uncool you really are by your answer, but we always end by asking the question, like, what's trending in your world? So what album, book are you reading, TV show, movie, like anything in the pop culture world, like what's trending in your world?
Okay, you threw in the pop culture thing. That's where you lost.
I've said football before. I just, you know, okay. What are you enjoying kind of trending in your life right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm going to be at risk of like sounding over spiritual, but I will say one of the things that's helped me stay accountable to healthy rhythms. I mean, I give my wife accountability in my life, like, and man, that's the hardest dagger when your wife, when Brooke is like, hey, I know that you value these things in your heart, in your mind, but your schedule or your actions don't show. I'm like, those are the worst. Like that, and it hurts the worst. I'm like, oh man, you know. So Brooke and I have had some of those honest conversations, and it's good. We have that accountability. I've given her access that speak the truth. But what's helped me and what's trending in my life is I'm trying to walk at the pace of Jesus. I'm trying to slow down to catch up to God, if that makes sense. So books like Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. You know, these books, these rhythms that I haven't done well in. I've done really well in challenging people to go give, serve, give it all. I haven't challenged people well in the fruits of my discipleship of, hey, are we Sabbathing? Are we resting? You know, I can challenge people to work till 1 a.m. in the office or go to the corners of the earth. But in my life, you know, I'm that's what's trending. I'm trying to keep some healthier priorities and rhythms. And I will say, guys, I went to a Justin Bieber concert.
I saw it. I can't even talk about it.
A few months ago, yeah.
I was so jealous. At the one in
LA? Jaden Smith and Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Tori Kelly.
Wow.
And I was sitting on the floor, and I didn't belong there. I was like, what am I doing here? It was for a ministry thing, Mission Stop Me.
Yeah.
Day, One Day LA. It was down there with Justin May, my friend. But then, not that that makes me cool.
No, you earned that's some point.
Justin Bieber,
it does.
As if Justin Bieber's cool to your audience, but yeah.
Oh,
we had a whole episode about Justin Bieber, so
you fit right in.
Great.
Ange, what's trending in your world?
I was just so greatly anticipating, waiting to hear what Bobby was going to say. I didn't think about mine.
I
feel like there's something. So you go first, because I got to check my phone.
Well, I'm gonna sound so much less spiritual than Bobby, but I watched the Adele's One Night Only performance last night.
So good.
That she did. It was like half concert, half interview with Oprah. I just want to be Oprah. Like, I want to be Oprah interviewing artists. Like, that's how do I get there? I don't know. But
you would be great.
Yeah,
that,
I've been.
Yep.
Thank you so 100%. Much. Thanks. Yeah, it was great. I missed Adele, so I'm excited for her album.
I remember why I wasn't going to say this one now, because it's just repeating Bobby and repeating, I think, even our last episode that we will have released as well. But I picked back up Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. So it's Pete Scazzaro. He does. We talked about this on literally the last episode.
Rachel said that.
She said something about like writing in the margins. I was like, dang, I think I have some good stuff in those margins. And then I'm just reading it again, because why would you not once you pick that book back up? So I'm curious about the discipleship one, though. Bobby, you said that that's kind of next up on my list. But that book is kind of that's one of the biggest things trending right now. The only other one, I mess up his name all the time, but Carrie Newhoff? Jamie, am I saying that right?
Yes.
His episode, you and I just talked about this, was his episode with Mike Todd. Fascinating. We could listen. I think he talks about accountability a bunch in that one, actually.
Yes.
And I really like a lot of his principles on the accountability side as well. He is another like long interview person, like hour and a half, 2 hours. So if you're into that kind of podcast, I think Mike Todd's is like a couple back now, but I thought that was very interesting. We could probably talk about that in another episode, but trending for sure.
Yep.
Listen to the whole thing twice. So
great. Well, Bobby, thanks so much for taking an hour and 9 minutes out of your night after having
meetings
all day long. We appreciate you and appreciate who you are in our life. So thanks for all you do, not just for us, but for the kingdom and for your family. So
hey, it was an honor to be with you ladies again. I don't know if I'm any cooler or more trendy from being on, but at least that'll be my claim to fame, that I'm slightly trendish, because I was on Jamie and Anja's podcast.
What an honor.
Amen. Thanks for tuning in today, guys. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and let us know what you thought of today's episode by tagging us on social media. This is Trendish. We'll see you soon.